Now we have, then, that immediate problem. You can, with a little practice, I think, satisfy yourself that it's resolved on a resisting 5 level. I'll go over that again very, very briefly, and that is to say the fellow is a communication particle rather than a communication cause and effect. And you have him receive communications and, you know, interiorize into them instead of going someplace, close with them. And then have him receive a communication and then get the sensation of sending himself someplace else. You see, the demand of a bad news is that you be somewhere else instantly. Any communication which carries bad news with it really is insisting on you being elsewhere. One of the silliest things you can get a pre-clear to do, by the way, is, I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be somewhere else. I'm supposed to be somewhere else. And so forth. You get that? He's supposed to be elsewhere. By the way, try that. Just say to yourself, well, I'm supposed to be there. I'm supposed to be there. Interesting, isn't it? That's because nearly every communication you receive says that you must do one or two things. You must either duplicate it or be someplace else. You must be it or elsewhere. Now, a 5 has an awful hard time being the communication because he's so used to receiving orders in this fashion. Well, now, sound is always telling you something. It says that it's safe to be here, or you should be elsewhere, or there's trouble over there. So just take sound as a communication. If you heard an explosion up the block, why, it would really be saying to you, duplicate it. You know, to hear it perfectly, you have to duplicate the explosion, or be elsewhere. Just the wave flow of it would say, be elsewhere. Now, let's take a bullet. The 5 will discover this when this is run on him, so you as an auditor ought to be prepared to have him discover it. He won't necessarily, but he's liable to. A communication and a bullet are, by our definition, and actually by behavior, quite similar. And a bullet falls within our definition of a communication, which simply is a particle from C to E. It's not a particle from C to E and then back to C again. That's not a communication. That's a conversation. You can have a conversation with bullets. A lot of people used to out here in Arizona. And very seldom did a fellow get to communicate back after somebody else had communicated first. Well, now, what's our goal here? Our goal is to get him over fear of being sent and to unreverse that inversion. Let's get the inversion reversed so it's running straight. Well, you do that by he receives a communication and closes with it, and he receives a communication and goes away with it. Because as he sits there, that 5 is doing, on all communications, some kind of a flinch. So this is really a reverse flinch. When he receives a communication, his impulse is to flinch back. But he doesn't flinch back. He flinches in. It's a reverse flinch. He's gone down the line far enough to do reversals on flinches. When trouble hits him, he closes with it. And that may or may not be a virtue. When it's done automatically, it's no good at all. Anybody can close with trouble. He would never have any randomity if he didn't. But that's a reverse flinch. Now, right in the middle between a reverse flinch as it works out and just a straight flinch is a beautiful apathetic null period, the powerlessness of which shouldn't happen to somebody. Now, you should also know that a 5 has probably been a member too by one of these invader forces, and they quite normally were left-handed, or not right-handed. Right-handedness is a very, very artificial development. Making everybody right-handed here on this planet is a sort of a slavery practice itself. Now, that shows up most markedly in a schoolchild who is made to shift from his left hand to his right hand in writing. And the schoolchild is usually very emotionally upset about this. Why? Well, because the boys were all southpaws. They wore a gun on the left-hand side. Their arms were always on the left. They always used their left hand. And the way they were crippled before they were shot down here was to fix them up so they couldn't use their left hand. So if a little boy is getting along fine using his left hand, he hasn't got this incident re-stimulation. And then you all of a sudden say, you mustn't use your left hand, you must now use your right hand, and he goes, boom! He's degraded, of course, because that's the implant. And when they run into that and go bad off from it, they generally count on the fellow getting occluded fairly early in life. It puts him on the chutes. Well, you'll find then that delivering communications and receiving communications with the left hand on a resistive five, you know, a punch to the jaw and receiving a punch to the jaw, that sort of thing, from the left-hand side, will re-stimulate the most awful feelings of weakness. It just gets terrible. I mean, it's just ghastly. Well, when you're doing this inverted flinch, a reversed flinch, when that starts to turn around and become a straight flinch, you know, he's hit and backs up, why, you're... Null period that lies right in between is a nice deep black apathy. And there's an implant that actually implants that weakness. You just have him manufacture the stuff, that's all. Just manufacture that weakness, do it often enough so he comes out of the null period. I'm only telling you this not because you need the historical data, but just as a little word of warning to you, is don't leave the guy in that null. He'd be weaker than a cat. He'd be dragging himself around with his fingernails. 3 a week. And he'll come out of it then and be able to exteriorize straight. Takes quite a bit of this on such a case, by the way, but it's just the same technique over and over and over and over. More locks will fly off with which you have no interest or concern. Lots of locks come off. The time he received a telegram that the barn had burned down will fly off and all of this stuff. The time he sent a message to this fellow that was such a nasty message. And there's all kinds of these present time locks. But the trouble is not in this lifetime. This boy generally tries to exteriorize as a black body, too, which is very amusing. Why should he exteriorize as a black body? Then he has degradation trouble with mass and so forth. So right after you run this communication, bap-bap technique, you have him go around and pick up pieces of mass and get how much he needs them and how much he has them and all of that sort of thing until he's finally satisfied with very small pieces of matter. Sort of an opening procedure. Okay? That's really a pattern of handling one of these fives to get him exteriorized. Now let's say that you have somebody who's exteriorized. And there are quite a few people here who are exteriorized. In fact, very far the majority are present. And you haven't yet had an opportunity to really clear up some things and do a grand tour. I shouldn't call it really a grand tour. A grand tour of this universe is a pretty big, wide proposition. You can do all sorts of interesting things. But the tour with which we're interested immediately is just a tour of the solar system. And the tour could be called The Solar System, Its Booby Traps, and Masses and Spaces. So after you get somebody out and his perception's up a little bit, why you get him going out around the town or around the building or something and looking at things and flinching? And then have them look at him and flinch. And he looks at things and flinches, and they look at him and flinch. You know, he sent him up to Camelback and have Camelback flinch, and then have him flinch from looking at Camelback and so forth. The flinches back and forth. His perception keeps coming up. Quite usually, then, you'll run in something on the subject of duplicating nothing, something like that. All right, now let's find a nothingness around you. Now duplicate it, now duplicate it, now duplicate it, now duplicate it, and this perception will come up some more. Now let's find the realest thing that you can find around here someplace. Okay, you got that, now make it flinch. Now you flinch from it. And so on. In other words, we sort of tin cup him around till his perception comes up. And then you run him with, just very briefly, because he'll have to be run enormously on this later, is you get him to duplicate himself, make two of him and be one and be the other one and then be both and be one and be the other and around. And then you make him resist the universe. And that's a whole process all by itself. The universe caves in on him from all sides and it packs him down and you exteriorize him from the mass and then you have the universe cave in on him and exteriorize him from the mass of that. And do this about eight times until he's got eight nice masses. Then have him put those together and bang them in real tight till they explode. Then have him duplicate that operation. Just have him duplicate eight masses and so forth. Till you get him over fear of resisting the messed universe. So he can resist it or not resist it at will. How do you do this? You bring it up to the ultimate result of having resisted it, which is to become a solid mass. You just resist all spaces and masses in all directions now and have them all come in on you. And exteriorize from that and so forth. You're getting him over being leery, and this whole process, the tour and all the rest of it, is just to get him over being frightened of being alive as a thing. Show him he can get away with it. Then you take him out someplace over Earth, and you locate some finite spot. We start to do some change of space processing. We get him over in the middle, standard one is get him over in the middle of the Sahara Desert, and get him over the auditing town and get him over the Sahara Desert and the auditing town or get him over the mountains of the moon and the auditing town, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then let him pick out something real over this far place. And then have him dive through solid objects. You first start in by having him dive at and miss solid objects. Dive at and miss solid objects, then have him dive through them. We'll generally pick up some live object at first. You know, have him dive through a cat, dive through a sheep. Have him do this until his fear of bodies is somewhat diminished, and then have him dive through masonry or mountains or something of the sort. And now start to do change of space processing around the solar system. Sun, moon, Earth, sun, moon, Earth, sun, moon, Earth, sun, moon, Earth, sun, moon, Earth. Have him get on the back of the moon, look around, see what he finds there. You can have him dive through the moon if you want to. And then go out in the asteroid belt and go around and take a look at it. And then have him particularly look at Mars. And be in the center of it and outside of it and down the center of it. Now, I call to your attention that most of the time you're operating, you're telling him to be here, be there. In other words, materialize, unmaterialize, and rematerialize. So there's no process for it except just that. He just does it. You tell him to be somewhere else, he just is there. You don't tell him move somewhere else. And this is the reason why. He can only move if he's a mass. And he isn't a mass. Now, you get him out and get him to chase a meteorite or something, a comet. Get him stand in front of it and have it rush at him and then have him pass through it and be in his tail and have him be out in front of it and start to resist it and then pass on through it and out his tail. And then you get him way up above a planet and then have him be on its surface and then be way up above it and then be on its surface and up above it and on its surface and then have him be up above it and go down to the surface. And this is the first time you'd have him move, see? As he starts to move toward the surface, he'll generally protest. He won't like that. So just have him be on the surface again. And approach it gingerly until he's actually willing to move toward the surfaces of things and so on. Well, now when you start to use this on Mars, I hate to have to talk about this, really. It's very terrible, I know, for Mars to be force-free, but it happens to be. Now, when he's way outside of Mars and he moves down to the surface, he's going to run into force screens. That's all there is to it. Because he's a mass. And the only way a force screen can hurt him, if he is a mass. Well, you tell him to move, he has to really be a mass, he thinks. So he starts to move as a mass, and he hits these force screens, and he doesn't like it. And so you tell him, be on the surface, and then you have him moved again. He'll eventually get to a point where he can move without being a mass, and that's what you're trying to educate him out of. Well, what that mean? That means four screens can't operate on him. In other words, all doors at that moment become unlocked in this universe. See how you do it? You have him move down towards something. If he can't make it or protest, you just have him be at his destination. Well, always, when you tell him to move at something and he doesn't get there, have him be at the destination. Don't leave an unfinished cycle of action in a term of a course of action. Solve it somehow. Get him there somehow. Always get him there, and always get him someplace else, and someplace else, and someplace else. But don't let him not arrive on you. You figure it out so he can arrive. Well, you have him scout then the various places, and then just start binging around like be in the center of the sun, center of the moon, center of the earth. You'll find out very rapidly that you can't talk fast enough to keep up with a Thetan. So, if you wish, you can institute some sort of a system by which you can really drill him in these places. Now, immediately above that, there's another specialized version of change of space processing. And this would be the grand tour. And you just have him be in all the places, the geographical area of all the places mentioned in what to audit. That starts in with his entrance to the mesh universe. And you have him be at that place, and then in the room. And then there, and in the room, and then there, and in the room, and there, and in the room, until he's in present time there. And then the place where he made his first facsimile, and then a place where, and so on. I think you had it included in your kits there. A paper? Well, that's it. That's the list. There's only one thing. There's an error on that list. That's 3 and 4 are reversed on that list. So reinverse them. Well, that's change of space processing, and that makes a grand tour.
Oh, over that.
Yeah. And you chase him all around the universe, and you give him, eventually and at last, a complete freedom and present time in this universe, and that's what the purpose of the grand tour is. Now, you got to do that with a fellow, and you got to do it pretty well. You find it very interesting. If you, too, happen to be operating fairly well, chase along with him. Now, it's very amusing to chase along with a Thetan, because although he becomes invisible when he becomes no mass at all, see, the trouble with most Thetans are they become a certain amount of mass. And the reason he can do this so ably is because what mass he really cherishes, the old pots and pans and chains and so forth, which he stowed, you're not asking him to abandon them. He's just leaving them for a moment, and you as an auditor standing guard over his possessions for him. So he's perfectly willing to move around all over the place without this mass bothering him. But most Thetans will carry with them a tiny amount of mass, and they are to some degree. You shouldn't tell your preclear this. You should never comment on it. But they are to some degree visible. And you certainly can spot them easily because you're auditing them. Now, when you say, now be over the pyramids, now how many pyramids do you see there? And they tell you the pattern of the pyramids. You're just above that pattern of the pyramids, and you see what pattern he's looking at. So you say, well, get that pyramid. Now choose one of these pyramids there. Which one is it? And he said, well, it's the one closest to the river. You say, that's fine. Now be on the exact top of it. Exact top, exact center of the top of it. You got that now? Okay, he's there, see. Well, you're going to spot him from there on. As a matter of fact, you probably see him. And you start chasing him around, and you tell him to scare up a flock of goats. Something like that. Be over the middle of the Sahara and scare up a flock of goats. Okay. You got him more or less located. You know where the flock of goats are and so forth, and you got the flock of goats picked out, and you get him to locate them geographically. You actually know damn well whether or not he chases that flock of goats. And this is the first place where you'll trip the guy up if he's using a tremendous number of facsimiles. And if he is, you have a very simple, well, you'd say, chase this flock of goats. You've got the flock of goats spotted, you see. And nothing happens to this flock of goats. I mean, they're just sitting there. You say, did you chase them? And he says, sure, sure, sure. Yeah, hell, he did. All right. You really mean what you say. You mean chase a flock of goats. Well, you don't get insistent upon this, but you must realize at that moment that this boy is using facsimiles. He is doing a flinch back from the mass universe.
So give him some more flinches. Without letting him in on your little secret. Just give him a few more flinches. And then have him mock up and duplicate and duplicate and duplicate and duplicate flocks of goats. And all of a sudden he says, well, what do you know? Yeah, there's a flock of goats there. You say, chase them. Well, how do you chase a flock of goats? Well, I don't know, bap one of them. Get a hold of one of their, run a beam through the brain of one. It's very easy to run a beam through the brain of a goat. There's nothing there. Find their anchor points, their balanced anchor points, and pull one off center. That'll make the goat start turning in peculiar circles, harass him, will get him to run. You can get the whole flock running with great ease. But you start him handling animals, and that's the other little gimmick that goes into this after you've cleaned up the mesh universe and you have him present time any place. You just start him handling animals. You know whether he's handling animals or facsimiles of animals. Now, he's not above, if he's really having a rough time of it, pulling this real covert one on you. He'll mock up the animal he's just seen, and he'll look at the mock-up and then do things with the mock-up, mostly because the body is so private. Well, that's what you're trying to get him over. He'll pull his trick on himself and on you and confuse his reality so that he says, well, it isn't very real anyway, but it's real enough for me, and he'll give himself a bunch of fairy tales about it. Truth of the matter is, he's merely frightened of handling animal bodies. He doesn't want to. And so you get him to handle insects, and you get him to handle various domestic animals, and go find wild animals, and so forth. And let's chase him over hill and dale. Let's sit on the tail end of a bluebird or a swallow or something and take a good flight. Until he's perfectly willing to do this. Now, in flight, of course, you take a bird or something like that, and you want to get him real high, and then make him do an appetite over tin cup. And then recover his balance and get him way up high again and then upset his flying balance and then get him way up high again and upset his flying balance. And after a while, Thetan begins to take over control of bodies, and he has always been trying to prove to himself that he can control anybody he runs into, and he's never quite made it. You let him finish that cycle of action. You get him control animal bodies, and you get him control real good. Animals, insects, birds, and then go in for fish. About the time you go into fish, your Thetan's going to start getting too interested in some cases, because the sea is composed of tremendous drama. There are no police around forbidding anybody from eating anybody, and there's lots of buddies to eat. You're getting down in the dark, deep abode of a squid, waiting for its prey, and have him start to monitor Mr. Squid and make Mr. Squid do various things. Such as squirt blackness, do other things. He gets real interested because it's very interesting handling fish. They're a three-dimensional beast. That is to say, they move in three dimensions. And moving in two dimensions, such as on the surface of the earth, becomes an extremely uninteresting sort of an activity after he's moved birds and moved fish. So his fascination for the body, his concentrated attention on one, relaxes, and as a consequence, he can handle one with greater ability. Because he hasn't any anxiety entering into it. See how that is? All right. Now, you've taken him on the grand tour. You've made him handle some bodies. And in a very elementary form, that's good enough to last you for a while till we get into SOP 80, because that's part of it. I've got to give you that now, however, because a lot of you were overreaching him. Now, it's a very, very good thing to run a person exteriorized on 8C at least once, all the way through. You can do everything at least once while exteriorized. That's really what the technique is designed to do. But don't be misled by the brevity of step 1B, because that is what I have just described to you. It isn't all wrote down by hand. But that is really step 1B, SOP 8C. It says, be in pleasant and unpleasant places, ugly places. You couldn't have had a more inadequate statement made of what you do with a Thetan after you've got him exteriorized. And just out of curiosity, you can always do end-of-cycle processing on a fellow when he's exteriorized. You know? And remember that he can be anything, and you have him be spaces. Don't avoid having him be spaces just because you don't like space. If you're auditing somebody and you're not feeling too well that day. Of course, your next lineup above this is you get him to do a lot of end-of-cycle processing and then get him to do every form of communication of which anybody of any kind is capable anywhere in the universe, including whistling people in with a phosphorus light. You know, whistling fish in and so forth. Okay, that is just as far as we need to go here at the minute, because you will find some people doing that. I really ought to give you a lot more on making sounds and making this and that and doing actual communications while exteriorized. And it really isn't germane to what we are doing right this minute. What you want to do is get him perfectly at ease and solve this first. The problem has two halves. And one of these problems is this. He believes the mesh universe is dangerous to him. You disabuse him of that. That's the first half of SOPAO. And the other half is jolly well convincing him he's damn dangerous to the mesh universe. Because if you don't run that naughty, he's going out and find it out for himself with consequences. Not necessarily consequences to him, but he's going to bull around and he's going to start taking it out on the mesh universe for all the things it's done to him this long. Because nobody ever bothered to tell him before that he didn't have to be a mass to have a personality. They told him quite the reverse. They told him he was dynamic and he needed energy and all sorts of things. When he finally finds out what you can do with energy out in the vacuum, there's practically no holding him. You can start running resistances into, you see, there's no resistance out in the minus 273 degree vacuum. And boy, can he handle electrical energy. Well, here on Earth, of course, he gets very, very caved in, the poor fellow. The air ionizes every time he puts out a beam, you see, and the beam just goes flop. A little inconsequential beam, which is a tremendous convincer. And what happens is that it convinces him he has no force or power. What it should convince him of is that electrical energy, as put out by himself, does not happen to have force or power when super-ionized by air. I mean, it's an entirely different thing. But you'll find out the first, if you don't know this, the first time you exercise him, he's outside, and you exercise him, and you say, put out a beam, he'll put out a beam. He'll be happy putting out a beam for a little while, then he finds out the beams are getting thicker. Then they get thicker and thicker, and he feels more and more degraded and so forth. He's running into air. Air is the big invisible barrier. Well, he doesn't run into this out in space. Boy, the mock-ups that you can make out in space are just strictly terrific compared to what they are here. And do they last? You get an operating Thetan mock-up thrown out there on the asteroid belt and so forth. Why, it'll just go right around with the asteroids. Round and round, round and round. Has no volume. It's why the people in the asteroid belt, by the way, are so terrifically superstitious. You never saw anything quite as superstitious as some of the other peoples of this particular system. By the way, don't keep on being so egocentric as to believe that Earth is the only populated planet in this system or this galaxy or in this island universe or in six or eight island universes. This would be the most impossible actuarial fact